Hello, and welcome to the Afro Reads podcast with your hosts,
Amara
and Ugochi.
Afro Reads is a book review podcast that was created out of our shared love for reading African fiction books.
We talk through its themes and try to tie its key messages to our African heritage, culture, and contemporary issues.
We invite you to turn the page and let's begin.
Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Afro Reads podcast. Thank you for joining us. Today, we'll be looking at a book called Freshwater by Akweke Emezi.
But before that,
what's an interesting thing that has happened this week so far?
So, I came across this news story about Bitcoin in Nigeria and how Bitcoin has been banned by the Central Bank of Nigeria, and I thought it was interesting because Bitcoin has been picking up a lot of interest over this past year. Well, the past few years, but definitely this past year, it's been garnering a lot of investors.
But what's interesting about the story that I learned about is Nigeria is the second or third largest trader of Bitcoin and some other cryptocurrencies in the world. And yes, I was quite excited about that. I always like to see Nigeria on a rank. It's not a corruption or poverty rank. It has to do with money and finance. So I was quite excited about that. Again, I'm not saying I really know the implications of that. But now that the CBN has basically prohibited in the trading of Bitcoin, I wonder what its global implications would be.
Right.
I was saying that obviously since we were the second, third largest trader after the US and I think Russia, that if there's this regulation, there's going to be a frenzy and possibly the traders of Bitcoin would start demanding its actual value and that could crash the economy of Bitcoin, for instance. But
because Bitcoin's value increases with the faith that people have in it.
Exactly.
In Bitcoin.
It's very, very abstract, but it's been growing. But what I also found contradictory to that, you know, the effect this prohibition would have is that when I did a Google search, there was no major news outlet carrying the story. Yes, there was no new major. It was just Nigerian news. And I don't know, but I think you said something about...
I think that if other countries caught on to what Nigeria is doing, because Bitcoin, it has no taxation. There's a lot of autonomy associated with it. And it eliminates bank fees and has low transactional fees internationally. And so I wonder if the Central Bank of Nigeria is losing money and if that's why they have now prohibited the use of Bitcoin in their country. That was my question.
Maybe somebody is like trying to curtail the news somewhere, do you think?
Maybe. It's a theory.
And as we were discussing earlier, you tend to wonder if it's a coincidence, this prohibition. You just tend to wonder if it's a vendetta, but...
Or if they're trying to help the country, the currency.
The currency, being that... I looked at the exchange rate, and Ugochi, it's now 645 naira.
That's a crazy currency because just a year ago, it was in the 400s.
No, yes, exactly.
So for it to rise that much in a short period of time, not sure what's going on.
645 and...
That's almost 700.
Yeah, so maybe it's a way to help. I also read a tweet that the reason why is that it's hard to steal. It's hard to embezzle bitcoins, and so the Nigerian government is cracking down on it. But yes, for whatever reason, we are watching the story and see how it develops. Please, if you have more information, simple, broken down information, yes, please share on our social media pages.
Yes.
As we said, we're going to be reviewing Freshwater by Akweke Emezi. Ugochi, could you tell us a little bit more about the book?
Yes, Freshwater was definitely an interesting read. It's a story of spirits that live within the boundaries of the main character's mind. The main character being Ada, born and raised in Nigeria, Southeast Nigeria. And it tells the story of Ada from birth, her move to the United States for school, her sexual experiences, relationship experiences. There's a point in there where she was also self-harming. And then it takes us to her present. So we're introduced to different spirits that govern parts of Ada and lead Ada through her various life experiences and how they influenced and guided her life and the trajectory of her life into self-discovery and finally self-acceptance.
I'm trying to understand her mind a bit better.
Right.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting understanding that the dimensions of one's personality and how it's manifested through spirits.
Right.
And also viewing it as a third party in the sense as basically showing signs of mental illness or some kind of mental health challenge.
Right. Someone, I guess, on the outside looking in.
Someone on the outside, yes.
Might say that this displays someone with mental illness. But as we go on and talk about it, I guess we'll talk through that and see if people who have read it thought that or thought it was something else.
Yeah. So in terms of the dimension of personalities, the spirits manifested that in that sense where each spirit or the narration for each spirit represented another layer of Ada, the main character's personality. So you start with the we spirits, which were a collection of spirits, and they did most of the narration that kind of followed her throughout and were innate because they were born with her and they were there throughout. So it was kind of that first foundation layer. So they had a personality in that sense. And even the way they narrated the story, it was a bit poetic and had a lot of rhymes to it. And they referred to her as the Ada as opposed to Ada. So it was like they held her sacred enough for them not to even mention her name as the daughter of Allah. So they kept referring to her as the Ada. And then you had Ashugara that came later, which was born out of traumas from sexual abuse. Referred to her as Ada and felt more like she was more Ada than Ada herself.
Mm-hmm.
And took over in most cases, but at the same time was very much protective of Ada. And
she was like the stronger character, right?
Yes.
In the book.
She was a stronger character in so much that at the end, Ada was trying to negotiate with her. But yeah, she was definitely the dominant one.
Yeah.
And then you had Yeshua, which represented the religious side. And then finally, Saint Vincent, which came at a time where she started to understand herself more and the gender dysphoria she faced. So in that sense, we understand that level in terms of the different dimensions. So if you're reading it through the eyes of the author, you can kind of see someone that is just trying to understand herself a little bit better.
Yeah.
But we wonder from outside looking in, because they describe those personalities, but that came with a lot of outward display of behavior, as we've alluded to, self-harm,
acting without consequences,
suicide attempts as well, and yes, not having meaningful relationships one after the other, and just not putting that effort in at all.
Mm-hmm. In the book, it seems that Ada wanted those meaningful relationships, but the spirits in her mind, mainly Ashugara,
mm-hmm.
prevented that for her, and she herself went along with that. She succumbed to that spirit that prevented her from having that meaningful relationship.
Yeah.
Or those meaningful relationships, I should say.
Yeah, there's that as well. And then another very important theme is that idea of, you know, as we said, those different dimensions in one's personality. If it's a way to cover certain traumas or kind of deal with major events in one's life.
And defense mechanisms.
So basically act as defense mechanisms. Like, so to an outsider, your sexual promiscuity and you just being more of the aggressor when that intimate moment happens is kind of a defense mechanism, seen as defense mechanism. Whereas when it's narrated when it's seen from the author's perspective, she's not even there. It's someone else that has taken over, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Almost like if you compare Beyoncé and Sasha Fierce.
Yes.
She's come into a different, I guess, part of herself that takes over, that's able to have more control, more mm-hmm. power, because she herself cannot do those things.
Yes, yeah. And that has been developed. So those personalities have been developed because mm-hmm. of certain key moments in life mm-hmm. that have just necessitated that. And to protect the core or the core of self, mm-hmm. they come out to attack, defend, you know, and just...
fight her battles.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. As one viewer says, the whole book is basically summed up to the devil made me do it kind of thing. Are you really describing yourself as you are? Or are you sectioning parts of yourself and saying other people did the work and you were just there? But really, where were you?
Like they're being used as a vessel.
Yes. So before we carry on with the themes, we realized that there was one particular word, Obanje.
Yeah.
That we hadn't really explained or touched on.
Yes. So Obanje is a term used in Igbo land. Mm-hmm. What do you say? It's part of Igbo tradition.
Yes.
Okay. It means children who come and go. Mm-hmm. It's an evil spirit that would deliberately plague a family with misfortune. So people have believed to cycle rapidly and repeatedly through birth and death, like the same child dying and being born over and over again. So I remember when I brought up this term to talk to you about a while ago,
yeah.
I didn't exactly or fully understand it. Mm-hmm. And you gave the example of sickle cell children.
Yes. So again, this was just through me reading and researching. And if you know more about Obanje, please let us know in the comment section. But basically, modern medicine relates Obanje to children of sickle cell. So you know that genotype? Yeah, the genotype of your parents gives an idea of if your child or children will be sickle cell. So if you have both parents that have the sickle cell, maybe SS or ASAS.
The dominant gene.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What that means is that one or more children will be born sickle cell. So for instance, if the first child comes into the world and is sickle cell, I know that people that have sickle cell go through phases where they are really sick. They are called like sick spells or something like that. Mm-hmm. For days where they are just not feeling well. And suddenly they usually just snap out of it through some kind of therapy or medicine. And they are all okay. But during that period, it's quite devastating for the family because there are several spells like that. I'm guessing in the olden days or in...
or places times where modern medicine
wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. That was common. So this first child dies, and then the sibling is born with the same sickle cell because of the parent's genotype, mm-hmm. and the same process is repeated all over again. Mm-hmm. So in those times, they thought those children were Obanjes. You know, the same spirits that is torturing the family and keeps coming back through the children. Mm-hmm. So I know what they used to do was to try, before the child dies, when they started to exhibit those symptoms, before the child dies, they usually marked them. Mm-hmm. So when they came back with that same mark, they would recognize the children as Obanje. But I don't really know what happens after that when you mark the children. But it was just an interesting
observation
or comparison to make. And I wonder if that's still the case, if people still make that kind of comparison. Mm-hmm. What I found really great about the book was the fact that the author's kind of juxtaposition, explaining the fact that she had come from a Christian family, but they had been given an Obanje child, which means that they were always doomed in that sense, that they were going to have a troubled child in the Igbo mythology sense. So it's just different facets, really, because if you look at it from the Obanje side, like, the spirits had already predicted that the family was always going to be divided up. The hearts, they are going to, like, try and weaken the family's hearts and have the family separated from each other. And it started with Sakchi, and the dad just got very disinterested. So they were just kind of doomed from the start, having that Ogbanje child. And you could see through, like, throughout the life of Sakchi, where she was present, but she was always kind of tortured almost by her daughter's experience. She was there when the suicide... She wasn't there when the suicide happened, but she called. She was one of the first people in the hospital. And then I think she also tried to hustle the therapist to stay longer. And it's just going through the experiences when she had the body transformation, her short-lived marriage, mm-hmm. and that constant torture throughout life that Anogbanje's mother always is expected to go through.
I also read that there's a term called Iyuwa.
Iyuwa, yes. Iyuwa,
which is an object that binds the spirit of the dead child to the world. So yeah. For Obanje children, they believe that Obanje children have that spirit that has bound them to the world, and that's why they keep coming back. Mm-hmm. So sometimes with family members or parents who believe that they have Obanje children, mm-hmm. they'll go to some type of priest or native doctor or something, mm-hmm. and the native doctor will go to their compound or mm-hmm. or wherever and try to find that object.
Oath, yes. That oath, I yeah. know they refer to it, the we refer to it, and they said finally they had to tuck it under her tummy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with tradition, that oath, if a priest comes and finds that oath or that object and destroys it, that is supposedly supposed to destroy that Obanje spirit in the family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that kind of ties it up.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting for me is how the character, I guess, Ada herself... Mm-hmm. was not mentioned, her viewpoints weren't mentioned so much. It was more so the spirits telling this story.
Yeah.
So it was mainly the spirits in the book. But then that kind of, in the beginning, when I started reading the book, it was a little frustrating because I was searching for Ada's viewpoints on things, like people she had come into contact with. But I then realized that these spirits are really her. So we don't necessarily need to hear from Ada herself because all the spirits put together are Ada.
Yeah, and just picking up from that, so I didn't notice that, but when reading reviews online, someone pointed out that it was very interesting that Ada's voice got stronger, and by the end, she was the person that did the narration, mm. as opposed to the spirits Asugara or we. She did the narration by the time she was heading back to her village.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very interesting viewpoint. I didn't pick up on that.
Mm. And you can also like parallel that with how we really are as people in that age bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So we go through a lot of things. And as we get older, we grow into ourselves or become more comfortable with ourselves.
Our voices,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably what the author was trying to convey when she was writing that, and when Ada had a stronger voice towards the end.
Yeah.
Because towards the end is when she really started her path in self-discovery and became more comfortable.
Self-discovery and, you know, had the confidence to sit down and talk with the spirits, mm-hmm. almost negotiate with them,
mm-hmm.
and just had more control. Even Asugara started to take a back seat. And Ugochi said, like, just different points in your life where at the beginning, you just come into the world. So you're kind of influenced by everything, very impressionable, everything that goes on around you. You're highly influenced. But as you begin to break away and break free and march towards your freedom,
mm-hmm.
all that layer is shed away. And it's you, yourself, and you just making your own stance in the world,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like, as you said, Ugochi, the book really resonated with me in that way.
Yeah.
It's crazy because to the outside world, the character, the behavior she was exhibiting is basically like somebody that is dealing with some kind of psychosocial issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, acting out in certain ways, sexually, self-harm,
mm-hmm.
attempted suicide, and many other things, being closed off sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and many other things, and mm-hmm. acting without consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But to her, this was her trying to contain all these layers of herself and just trying to control them. And then her acting out is them taking over. But with time, she kind of quiets the noise, and is that back and forth going on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other themes you want to bring to light?
Not for mental illness, but we can move on to the balance or disparity of Christianity and tradition.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a big one because, for instance, you have the spirits, you have Yeshua, which is Christian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the spirits, and then the fact that Ada identifies it as Obanje. Yeah, so I found it interesting in the book, the way she was named. Well, let's go back to her dad. Her dad prayed for a girl.
Yes.
So he got on his knees, prayed for a girl, and he got a girl. But we, the spirit who was, I guess, born when Ada was born, says that the dad was into worldly things, more into money, material things. So as he prayed, God, the Father, the one that we know, the all-encompassing being, didn't answer his prayers. It was the gods who was there to answer his prayers. And so they gave him Ada, as she is. And when she was born, I think the dad knew that this child is unique or different.
Yeah, and I just remembered that episode when Ada was younger with the python, and the dad went to, like, kill the python viciously.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then also the book started off as them being a Christian family, but ended off with Ada having to go back to the Igbo traditions and the Igbo roots, and even really questioning herself why she didn't just stay and just be part of it all in the village.
I wonder what would have happened if that was the case.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if she's better off.
Yeah, I thought about that.
Yeah, because she went away and discovered herself and became more comfortable with it. Versus if she was in the village going through all of this, I wonder how she would have manifested herself.
And what other people would have thought. Because I think, at least abroad, they have this polite way of saying, okay, maybe this is something that you need to see a therapist about. And she had her friends and her boyfriends that were supportive but thought she was a little bit weird. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Nigeria, we're more harsh and more direct with the truth.
Yeah.
So yes, there would have probably been like a lot of spiritual mentors to help her, but I don't think she would have lived a very comfortable social life.
Definitely not. Because even her doctor in the U.S. was like, oh, this is the first time I've heard about someone wanting to do this to their body and this to their body. But he didn't seem like he was talking down to her. He was like, oh, wow, this is interesting. Versus if she even inquired about that in Nigeria, what would they have said? It would have been shut down, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it's crazy how, again, that conflict, it's crazy how it would have been shut down in Nigeria. But we have such a strong presence of the Igbo mythology and her going back, meaning there was kind of a market there or kind of an understanding. But in the same time, Southeast is a very Christian part of Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
So she would have definitely not had an easy life because, again, her dad's portrayal as being a social, someone that was very socially conscious and everything, plus the whole Christian pressure.
Yeah.
Whereas at the opposite side, you also have to like see a lot of chief priests to understand your condition. It would have definitely been too much.
But do you think her dad would have been more present if she stayed in Nigeria? Because
he wasn't present in the beginning when she was sexually abused and she was trying to tell him.
True. But if she were to grow up in Nigeria and become like in her 20s or whatever, in school, she would be representing him. Like, she would be more socially involved. So that would garner more attention for her dad. And do you think that because that attention is coming, attached to her dad's name, would he have been more present in saying, okay, child, let's have a discussion?
Kind of like embarrassed and ashamed.
Because
she would have definitely brought shame. Like, she was quite promiscuous.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because of an encounter she had in the U.S., but she also went through sexual abuse in Nigeria. So Ashugara was probably just inside waiting to come out kind of thing.
Mm.
So yes, maybe he would have been more involved because of that, like, social angle, mm-hmm. like, don't spell my name kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found it, and I was discussing with you earlier, like, it's just crazy. He knelt down to pray his Catholic prayers for a girl.
Yeah.
And almost 3/4 of her life, he was just never involved,
mm-hmm.
nonchalant, did not care.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that very...
And I think he was that way before she was born. I think that's just who he is.
So why pray?
Well, this is the thing with Christianity. And I wouldn't say Christianity versus tradition, but there's a lot of people who claim that they're a Christian out there who pray for praying's sake, but don't follow the path. I think that's who he was. I think he's just more interested in material things, being popular, having what people thought of him versus really understanding who God truly is and what he was really praying for.
Okay. Yeah, maybe, yeah, the heaviness of what he was praying for, mm-hmm. he didn't understand. Maybe he just wanted a girl because he had just had a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he looks very, or his character seems very shallow in
mm-hmm.
that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, as we reported that other gods and God did not answer him, maybe God thought, yeah, this was coming from a very superficial place.
Yeah.
So you're right. You could be right in that sense.
Yeah.
To me, another perspective was Yeshua. So what do you think of Yeshua?
Yeshua. So earlier you showed me a picture of South Park Jesus, right? So now I have a different picture of Yeshua in my head. The South Park Jesus. That image fits him well because he came in when he was asked to come in, like mm-hmm. quietly, and he would leave when he felt he was not needed.
Yeah.
However, when he speaks like wisdom, and he doesn't need to say a lot
yes.
to make an impact.
Yes, yes, yes.
So there was one time that Yeshua told, I think it was Ashugara, Yeshua said that she was weak with lust, incapable of restraint. I think he was telling the wee spirit that the pain would not stop, that he said he is a God and doesn't have to be fair, but will lead her to righteousness, for her fear was to become evil. So he would lead her to righteousness for the sake of her name. Mm-hmm. So that, I guess that moral compass that he had, like he didn't have to be loud. He didn't have to be aggressive. Ashugura had to stay relevant. She was dominant, but that's how she stayed relevant.
Yes, that's true.
The wee spirit wasn't so much dominant, but looked up to her, I guess.
Yeah, that's, they were kind of part and parcel of her. So.
Right, that's how they stayed relevant. But Yeshua didn't have to do any of that. And when you're loud and aggressive, you're fighting for attention. You're fighting to have a dominant place. That's how I saw Ashugura.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeshua didn't have to be that. So that's what resonated with me. That's why I like him.
So I agree with what you're saying. And I didn't see it from that way. That's why I call him South Park. Because I just feel like the author in general, and this is not me being criticizing her because, yeah, I'm quite open to what people believe in or whatever. But I think her general impression or how she painted Yeshua was more like he definitely wasn't portrayed in the Christian sacred sense. It was just more like he's one of many options I found.
Mm.
And that kind of, we understand he makes up our moral consciousness.
Yeah.
And he's always going to be needed, but he's not the be all and end all. There are other phases in life or stages in one life that mm-hmm. can either quiet him or make him even stronger.
Mm-hmm.
He's there, but he's not someone that is taken seriously. Like, he's competing with the other gods and the other spirits. So he's just, it's like, I beg, your own to do kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my impression. And sorry, yeah. I might be wrong. But piggybacking of what Ugochi said, he was dominant, but it's a weird way because we were discussing it earlier. And I feel like his character or his portrayal kind of, is a definition of what the whole book is about, where in some parts of your life, some things are just glaring and prominent and then they phase out and then they come back. It's like a whole roller coaster. And so when she was smaller as a child, like I think when she was going through missing her mom not being present, she called on God a lot and you could see a lot of religion in her life back then. And then when she grew older and moved to the States, Yeshua completely dropped off. And then he came back up when she was going through, I think after her marriage and things like that. And to me, it's a journey of life as well. I was kind of relating it to myself and just being in a Nigerian child in general, where religion is basically part of your upbringing, you know, even whether or whether you like it or not, it's not a choice. You just get with the program, go to church, pray, and then it kind of takes the back seat as you begin to discover yourself in your 20s, early 30s. And then later on in life, even in your 30s, you kind of bring it up once in a while and just have some kind of soothing, calming experience, just being in the Word of God, whether reading Bibles or going to church. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it kind of flows on like that, or you tuck it away again and bring it out. And then in your 60s, 70s, it becomes dominant or prominent again. So
do you think because in your 60s and 70s, you have a great, like a bigger idea of who you are?
Bigger idea of who you are and just... And the way life works. Dropped off. Yeah, a lot of things have dropped off. So a lot of yourselves have dropped off and you're just more in the moment and present. And I guess you're just nearing the end and you're just trying to wonder what life would look like.
So do you think it's harder to accept God or have God in your life when there's a lot of things going on? I mean, that's for sure.
I think reality, and again, hopefully I'm not offending any Christian, but like the reality and my life, I think that's very accurate. When you're having a lot going on, not even a lot going on in terms of being busy, you're surrounded with the world now filled with social media, news every day. Your social life is like at its peak, where people are coming in with their own perspective.
You're trying to navigate the world.
And to
figure out why things are. It's new. You become open-minded to other things and exploring other things.
Exploring. Yeah. So I think Yeshua he wasn't as dominant as Ashugara, but I think his role is so important in this freshwater book.
Maybe dominance isn't the right word. There's a word that I'm looking for, like, it's
consistent.
Consistent.
Ever-present.
Like, ever-present, like the one that's going to last through time.
Yeah, durable.
Durable.
Or whatever, yeah, something.
Something that's, it's going to last, yeah.
My favorite spirit was St. Vincent, because I thought St. Vincent came in at the right time when she was sure of what she wanted. Ada now knew she had gender dysphoria, and at that point in their lives they were like, this is me, this is who I am, and I'm going to do something about it. And they made physical changes to themselves to kind of reflect that and to kind of increase their confidence. And it's the physical change as well, you know, coming from a world where we're all boxed up in gender roles and what male and female should look like. You know, having the Saint Vincent there has come in to say, I don't know about gender, I just know I identify more as being a spirit and I believe more in gender fluidity, and here is who I am. And I think Saint Vincent did that well. It represents a lot of things as a person, that kind of, I'm not ashamed of who I am, I'm different from the stereotype, I'm different from the definition, but I'm not ashamed and I'm loud and proud about it. In different aspects of life, it doesn't have to be going through a sex change or anything like that, but just thinking differently mentally, emotionally, how you deal with people and relationships, and physically,
The freedom, if that's the case. The freedom to explore.
Explore and express yourself.
Yes, yeah, very important.
So that's why I like St. Vincent. Do you have any final...
With Christianity and tradition, I thought it was interesting how Ada's uncle named her. In the book, they didn't say what her name was, but did they say Python's egg?
Yes.
But they didn't say Akweke.
They never said Akweke.
But Akweke means Python's egg.
Yes.
Yeah. So I thought it was interesting that the uncle named her. And the uncle was part of a church called Cherubim and Seraphim Church.
Sele. Nigeria. And apparently I was dedicated there.
Really?
Apparently, like, I was so sick or something like that when I was younger. And they brought me to London. And I don't know who suggested it, but I ended up at a Cherubim and Seraphim church called Sele.
Really?
And, yeah, they just prayed for me and I did some kind of dedication and they said I was going to be a prophetess. Okay, bye. Continue.
So apparently they have their worship methods. They focus on the New Testament and the Book of Revelations in particular. They use candles for light, incense for to ward off evil spirits. Mm-hmm. Does that sound familiar?
I just know I felt better. I'm here today.
Yeah, they have special prayers for the sick. That's what that was highlighted, yeah. And they're a group, apparently, that has dreams and visions.
Yeah, and they said I'll also start seeing visions of Jesus. That hasn't happened. But I'm just putting it there.
So then at the same time, this uncle also, when Ada was born, well, they mentioned that he was part of Uwumiri, right? So they did worship drowned in water, believed all fresh water comes from the mouth of a python. Yeah, that all water is connected. Python is God and its egg is sacred and is a source of the stream and that the python is beyond reptile. So it was interesting that he was part of this church, yet he also didn't leave that other part of him.
Yeah.
And used that other part of him to name his niece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, so the python thing you're saying, is that part of the Cherubim and Seraphim Church?
No, this is Uwumiri.
So he was part of the Uwumiri.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's not a church, but I think it's a tradition.
Oh,
a traditional belief.
Oh, I didn't see that in the book. I must have slept
off. Oh, no, I researched that.
Okay.
They mentioned Uwumiri, so I was like, let me go and see what that is.
That's interesting. Again, that's like a paradox. We've not really talked about the author, actually.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the author?
Yeah.
So it kind of gives like a background. So Akweke, she is, I believe, in her early 30s or mid 30s now, but she was born in Nigeria. Her dad is Igbo. Her mom is Malaysian.
Tamil. Mm-hmm.
So she grew up and she, I guess, always had this feeling that she was no Banje. Mm. Yeah. She calls herself they. So we're going to
stick to they,
address her as they. At the time, they realized that they was a Banje, was the same time that they realized they was trans. So they wrote in the New York Times a piece on their transition experience. And they said, gender is such a human thing. They've come to realize or come to think of mutilation as a shift from wrongness to alignment. So they went through a fluidity phase.
Yeah.
Hence why Akweke addresses herself as they, because they identifies more as a spirit.
Or a group of spirits.
Or a group of spirits.
A collection of individual selves. I think she said that.
Yes. Rather than just being a human.
Being a human and being defined by a certain role. Like collections of body types.
Mm-hmm.
I read the article in The Cut as well, and they were going on about how they decided to do the full hysterectomy, and that's been interesting. But the point is, so here is this author that has put their life on basically in a book, because she says this book is basically their memoir and everything. So for someone to just like bunch everything and label it someone's mental illness journey is a bit one-sided as such, and would like to think of it as more like it's based on your perspective and definition, because the author is trying to relate her experience to the world, and I guess they are more spiritual aware than the average person,
right?
And so this is just them sharing their experience. So it's very confusing, but who are we to judge, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you go into it thinking that you only have one personality or you're only one being, I guess, I don't know, you will be confused. But if you go into it understanding that you're made up of different aspects, there are different aspects of yourself that some you can't control, some are harder to control, some have bad habits, right? And you want to control that. That's sort of how I came to see Dave's character, Radha's character.
I have a feeling that when the author was a child, they were not really aware of St. Vincent. They were not aware of Ashugara. Those spirits only came about as they developed and went through certain experiences or certain milestones in life. And I feel like this book kind of just proves life is a journey. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're going to get at the end. And there might be other layers that have come about, mm-hmm. you know, after the book. And it's just, generally, it's just the way someone has decided to live their life. And this is her memoir, and we should just see it from that angle, even right. if, obviously, as a third party, we've defined it as either mental illness or given it certain names and categories, which I know the author does not like to do at all. I think Akweke kind of takes it further, and basically I understood that it's not the child herself or himself that knows their Ogbanjes. They actually don't know. They're just living their life mm-hmm. and everything. And there's that disconnect. But Akweke seems to think that you can even be aware of it because they call themselves Obanji, mm-hmm. which I found very interesting because that's definitely not what I knew. And they sort of know that they're Obanji, and they're trying to even define it more by like going through the body transformation. And they said they had a hysterectomy. So mm-hmm.
She had endometriosis.
Yeah, they had endometriosis, but so that they don't have kids, because Obanje is not meant to have kids. But I'm like, how do you know that though? But
with that though, because she had endometriosis, I think is why she had the hysterectomy.
They say that's why, but they also point to the fact that Obanje children are not meant to have
children anyway. So could it be that because that was a defining moment for her, that because she had that issue, she was like, you know, I know about Obanje, and this is happening to me too. This is further confirmation.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, because I'm like, it's like they are going around even just wanting to be that, mm-hmm. like embodied it. But it makes sense. Maybe there are life signs like endometriosis that is even like telling them more that they are Obanjes.
Yeah, so it could be because she's aware of what an Obanje is. Like some people who are not aware mm-hmm. of what an Obanje is will probably not be going around saying I'm that.
Yeah, but the big question is, aren't Obanjes meant to die early?
Right. So that was a question I had too.
So I don't know, but as I said, like one thing with fresh water is that I was like, oh wow. And then as soon as I realized this is someone's life, I was mm-hmm. like, do you know what? I respect it. If this is the way like the author has decided to handle life mm-hmm. and her definition of it, mm-hmm. then who am I to judge? After all, my opinions about different aspects in life has changed back and forth, and I would want everyone around me to accept that.
Right.
Yeah.
More so respect it.
Yes. Also, just looking at the reviewers and what people say. So most people as well were a bit intrigued by the book. A lot of people loved it. They described it as like one of a kind in terms of literature, something they'd never read before.
I agree. I like that. It's funny that I went into it confused, but I definitely appreciated it because I do believe that we are made up of different personalities. But when it comes to mental health is when it's, I guess, you're destructive. You become destructive mm-hmm. to yourself and to others. But I definitely appreciated the multiple personality dimension of the book.
Definitely. Yeah, I think the one thing I'll just say out of the whole book is that, yes, I'll recommend it, but with a warning, kind of, this is new. things don't fit in the lines. You can't color in the lines. You have to be more fluid in your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I just the nitpick was that, yes, as I said, I wish I got other people's points of views and it was more developed in that way, because I felt like most of the things she was writing, the author kind of wrote about, didn't really have an impact on my life, or I couldn't really relate to it. So it would have been nice to see things from, instance, the psychiatrist's point of view, who she saw standing in front of her, or even Sakchi. Sakchi was so interesting, but we could only see Sakchi through Ada's eyes. It would have been nice if she was given, like...
not even Ada's eyes, but, like, Ashigara's eyes or Wien's eyes. Exactly. Yeah.
So that would be nice if she was given a perspective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or those her boyfriends in Georgia.
Yeah.
Those poor brothers. Oh, my God. Or Itohan, you know? Or just people, just how do we view Ada as a third party,
mm-hmm.
not in her body? So that would be interesting.
Yeah, it would have been. But I completely understand, though, why... I really do appreciate the spirits being more dominant for some reason. I don't know if I relate, or maybe I do relate. So I think, or coming in from that perspective, I understand why the spirits told the story. Because I feel like they were her, Ada.
They were her, they are them. So you're telling story from a spirit's perspective, but it's really about yourself. But so as I said, the book is not... We decided that we were confused with this book, but I think the confusion is allowed, because as we said, it's someone's memoir, trying to understand themselves better, and no one else can best understand it than the person who wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're allowed to be confused and allowed to draw our own amateur conclusions, and hopefully some of it is right and some of it is just our perspective.
Right. There's no right answer.
Do you have a parting message or
an
inspirational quote you'd like to share?
Yes. So my favorite quote from this book, let me read it. It says, "But it is only a fool who does not know that freedom is paid for in old clotted blood and fresh reapings of it, in renewed scarifications." So I thought this quote was interesting because it reminded me that freedom basically is not free. That freedom is not pretty. The process to get there is not pretty. I didn't know what scarifications was, so I looked it up. And it's a permanent body modification that affects the texture of skin, purposely creating a scar. So maybe to remind you of a journey or experience or a sacrifice that you made to, I guess, get to that freedom that you're seeking.
Yeah, and, you know, as I said, renewed scarifications means that even when you get the freedom, you need to still keep sacrificing to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
That renewed scarification. So the scars are not going to be old scabs one day that are going to peel off.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be renewed in some way, some sacrificial way to keep that freedom journey alive.
Mm-hmm.
So... that's what I understood by it.
Yeah. And I guess it should remind us all that freedom, you really have to work hard for your freedom. You have to, if you want to be a millionaire or, you know, if you want to own a business, you have to put in a lot of work.
Continuously.
Constantly.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't stop, basically.
It doesn't stop. Yeah. So that's why I like that quote, because it's a reminder that if I want the freedom that I want, I need to work hard for it.
Yeah. What the book has taught me as well, and I've said this before, is just everyone is trying to deal with life in their own way or shape or form. No one is right, no one is wrong. So it's important to respect people's boundaries and just people's definition of life. As long as they're not hurting anyone or themselves, then we're good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We're good. And it seems cliche, but since reading Freshwater, that's been my perspective.
Yeah, it's given me a new perspective on people who are labeled to have personality disorders or a certain mental illness. Definitely, I'm more able to understand them.
Yes,
as before, I was just like, oh yeah, maybe medication will help, but now it's given me a fresh perspective.
And it might be our definition that they have mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
That is our definition as the world has come to label it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily that. It could just be them in basically a lot of spirit forms coming together.
Mm-hmm.
basically, the definitions are just fluid. Mm. I think that's what I realized. Mm. It's all fluid. We are all in this world in a fluid way.
Yeah.
The dominant perspectives are always going to kind of be discriminatory
mm-hmm.
against other people or mm-hmm. against people that don't follow the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just life.
Or become law.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was heavy.
Yeah.
What do you think? I'm sweating.
it was a difficult book to read. That's why.
A difficult book to read, and we kind of hope we didn't confuse you.
Hope not.
But convinced you.
Yeah, to read it.
It's less than 300 pages.
Yeah, I thought it would be an easy read because of that.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a difficult read, but I would definitely recommend it to get that other perspective.
Yes.
Yeah.
So our next book that we will be reading and discussing is Homegoing.
Yay!
So we are taking a trip all the way to Ghana and Elmina Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the book written by Ya Gyasi. That's mm-hmm. all I'm going to say, so yeah. I don't spoil it, but we hear it's really good. So we're hoping to come back on our next episode to start a discussion about it. We want you to please purchase the book, but you can purchase it on Kindle or hardback on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's quite widely publicized, so you can get it anywhere.
Yeah. All right. So don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and follow us on our social media handles, Twitter at @Afro_Reads, Instagram at @AfroReadsPodcast, and our Facebook group at @AfroReadsPodcast. If you happen to read the book discussed in this podcast, we would love to hear your thoughts, opinions, or questions that you have about it. So please leave a comment on any of our social media handles. And we will also be sharing other interesting content on our social media. So just stay tuned or stay connected with us so we can have some more informative discussions leading up to the next episode. We're looking forward to you joining us on the next episode. But until then, take care and have a blessed week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.